This is What's It Like with Dr. Ken Tangen.
Hi, I'm Ken Tangen. This is episode 82 of What's It Like. My guest is Scott Jensen, somewhere in Palo Alto?
Yes.
In the California coastline. Did you grow up in that area?
No, actually, I grew up in Milwaukee.
Oh, you're a long way from home.
Yeah.
So did you come from a large family?
No, just my sister and I just grew up in Milwaukee. But I went to undergraduate here at Stanford, and that's what brought me out to the West Coast.
Oh. So what's Milwaukee like?
It's a great town to grow up in. I really enjoyed it a lot. A little cold at times, but great place to be as a kid.
Who had the biggest influence in your life when you were growing up?
Probably, I'd have to say, my father. He's the one that was the kind of the energetic go-getter in my family, and I always kind of took inspiration from that.
What was your major challenge as a child?
My major challenge as a child was probably I guess it's kind of classic, just the introversion that comes from being a nerd.
Mm-hmm.
I was never one of the popular kids, you know, got picked on like many kids are, kind of retreated into my projects and my studies and my stuff like that. And so it took me kind of a while before I kind of came out of that shell. When I got to be in high school, then I kind of got a little bit more energetic, a little bit more outgoing, and I was eventually even president of my class my senior year.
So was there a particular childhood experience, do you think, that has contributed most to who you are today?
Nothing singular. I think I'm just very lucky that I just had both my parents in a very supportive household, and kind of just let me kind of do my goofy things that kids do. I mean, all the way through my college years, I feel that a lot of times kids don't really have all the tools in place to make good decisions. My parents kind of let me wander a bit until I finally kind of got kind of more on track. I tried everything from sociology to psychology and do all sorts of stuff. I mean, those are fine careers. I just was just exploring and trying, and it wasn't until probably my junior year that I really kind of settled into computers.
How did you settle on Stanford?
Oh, it was just one of those, it wouldn't happen today. I applied because my best friend applied. I graduated in 79, and it just wasn't as intense of a thing to pick college back then. And my parents in many ways weren't that involved. So I had a safety school, you know, the local college, and Stanford, and those are the only two I applied to.
So what exactly do you do?
There's the answer I give within the tech crowd, and there's the answer I give like when I'm talking to at family reunions. So the answer in the tech crowd is I am a user experience designer.
Ah.
And so I do, I design digital products, both hardware and software. And usually within the tech community, a UX designer is a well-known term. But if I'm going to be, you know, like in a crowd with my family, I might just say I'm a product designer.
They expect you then to ask, do they ask you which products?
Oh, yeah. And then I can trout out the various companies I've worked for in products. And then they go, oh, okay. But the whole idea about designing just the software and just the screen is actually a pretty hard thing for people to understand. Most people tend to like to focus on or can most easily understand hardware.
Yes, something you can hold in your hands.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you always want to do that?
Yeah, it's kind of funny how I, even when I was an undergraduate working on computer science, I remember in particular one of my earlier assignments, we had to do a simulator for a processor. And you had to write the interpreter and that kind of stuff. And we had everybody, you had to give it to somebody else in class to grade. And then you would grade each other. And mine won best user interface.
Wow.
Which is kind of weird that they even have that, they didn't have that kind of goal. But I kind of knew back then that I kind of was really interested in that.
What's the best thing about your job?
Oh, just the constant variety. It's a pure problem solving job, and you just have to kind of absorb tons of ideas, tons of problems, tons of just personalities, and then reach into that mess and kind of come up with a solution that works for that particular crowd. I think it's a very interesting challenge.
Let me turn the question around. What's the worst thing about your job?
The hardest part about the job is that it's, and almost every career kind of has this story, that everyone thinks that what you do is easy. And I think many marketers, I think, often say the same thing. Everyone's a marketer and everyone's a designer. And, you know, I've done hundreds of user tests and prototypes, and I've got scars all over my body from all the ways in which things go wrong. And so I have a certain kind of understanding of gut instinct as to what categories of things work and what categories of things don't work. And no matter who your client is, no matter who you're working with, that doesn't count for anything sometimes. And that's always a little bit frustrating.
And do they expect things to be done faster than it usually takes?
That's not usually the issue. More often than not, it's just simply they think it's really obvious. And when you tell them, listen, we've actually tried this kind of product before, and they just don't really understand why. And so it'll be quickly discounted. So in many, many cases, the role of a designer in many ways cases is to be an educator. You've got to kind of explain to them what's going on. And once you kind of build up that trust, you've got a friend for life. And part of the challenge of being a designer is that you have to kind of rebuild that trust with every new client that you have.
What has surprised you about your job?
That's a very reflective question. Maybe if I can rephrase it as what surprised me about my career is how often I have to rebuild my skill set. What I was good at 20 years ago doesn't matter at all anymore. I feel in many ways I have to kind of get a whole new skill set every 5 years at least. And that's kind of challenging and scary, but fun at the same time. But the type of design work now is completely different than the design work that I was doing 5, 10, or certainly 15 years ago.
Different in what way?
You just have different technological building blocks. And not all designers feel this way, but I feel very strongly that design needs to be very close to the technology that you are using to implement it. I often have this picture I draw, and right now I'm extending my hands in parallel with my fingers kind of like wiggling towards each other. And I have this tension between kind of the aspiration of what you want and what the technology is capable of doing. And usually good design happens when you've got a crazy idea that's barely possible. And to kind of have that tension is really important. And too often I feel I see designers fail because they're only aspirational and they really don't understand what's going on. So going back to your question, by knowing and understanding what technologies are, and I actually have training as a programmer, I feel it makes me a much better designer.
So when you're redoing your skills, does that mean for you that you have to learn a new computer language or a new art approach?
Oh, I think it can vary. It's not so simple as, oh, time for new language. I mean, about, 5 years ago, I realized that JavaScript was really important. So I kind of got on that bandwagon. And then I learned CSS. And CSS has multiple flavors of CSS. And but then I learned different editing tools, whether it was Photoshop or OmniGraffle or Illustrator, or, you know, you keep going on. Or right now, I'm doing a tremendous amount in Keynote. Not because it's necessarily important to do an awful lot of talks, which I do a lot of, but also it's a really fantastic animation toolkit for dummies. So you can do really quick things. And so I've done an awful lot of mocking up of things actually in Keynote. So I just feel like the landscape of the tool set is just constantly changing.
Keynote is the Apple Fem's version of PowerPoint, right?
Oh, I mean, I'm trying to come up with a humorous description, but it is so far beyond PowerPoint, it's not even close.
I'm trying to give context, but yes. So you use them both, or is it
I've used them both. makes me want to shoot myself. Keynote is inspirational. You can do an awful lot. I mean, in many ways, it's very primitive. If you try to use Keynote as an animation tool, you'll go a little bit crazy. You've got to make sure you know what it can and can't do. But for very quick and dirty stuff, it's really quite nice.
What type of person would be good at your job?
An empathetic person.
Mm.
I feel that more often than not, my biggest learnings have come when I was proven wrong, and my success came from admitting me being wrong as quickly as possible. So, and I do feel that when I talk to certain people, you know, I talked to you before about gaining trust with my clients and so forth. I have come to the conclusion that some people will just never get it. They just cannot put themselves in other people's shoes. And the whole idea of a designer is to kind of understand what it's like to be frustrated, understand what it's like to be confused, and to kind of try to design with that attitude and mentality in mind. And too many people think it's obvious.
Mm-hmm. From a user's point of view, it's always surprising to me that designers don't do what I think they should do. How do you come up with solving your problems?
So you're saying how do designers solve? Because, you know, our problems are our clients' problems, right?
So how do you come to do you pretend that you're a user in order to figure out how to solve it? Or do you have to ask somebody ahead of time?
Oh, well, there is a tremendous amount written and done about how to do that, the whole design process. There's a rich heritage about doing field studies, you know, understanding who your users are, creating taxonomies of who your users are, you know, pain points. There's a lot of research around that. But at the same time, I don't want to sound sacrilegious, but in many ways, I think good seasoned designers do develop kind of this empathy, this radar that just it gets concerned when things aren't quite going right. There's a classic rule that you are not the user. And that's always very important, that you don't design necessarily just for you, even though there are people who actually, you know, have that theory as well. It's a complicated field. But the idea is that you should always have a healthy skepticism for what you think is easier or not easy. But the bottom line is, more often than not, you get that from studying users and studying them in context.
I was at the Apple Store the other day and playing with an iPad, which I don't have, and I have vision problems. And I've seen people squeeze and expand or whatever. And I was trying it out, and it wasn't working. And they said, oh, no, you have to be inside of a program for it to work. And I thought, how odd. If you have this technology that is designed to do something, why wouldn't every level of it have this capability? Why couldn't I expand my menus or whatever, or the calendar or whatever issue?
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Is that, from a user's point of view, it's hard to tell whether that's design or technology.
Well, I think if you're talking about, for example, that if you could pinch zoom anything, for example, that's just simply a matter of making the system more robust. And you just bumped onto something that is just technologically hard to do. That in the way it's done in the case of iPad or the iOS operating system is everything is kind of a fixed object. And the only thing that tends to be zoomable is the application itself, you know. And so they've only given that to that control to effectively the application window. And everything else is not done that way. It could be, but it would be a significant amount of work. And you could argue that in some ways it might cause some trouble, but even though I still think that you're onto something and that would be worth exploring. But in many, many times in technology, you need to be just good enough. There's a big difference, you know, the perfect is the enemy of the of adequate sometimes, you know. And so there is that kind of issue that, you know, would the iPad be a much better product for having that? I think it would be better. It probably would not be more breakaway of a success than it is now, though.
It would be better for people with vision problems. But
absolutely.
But there aren't as many of us as a market, I'm sure.
Well, and I think what is happening, though, because I don't want to sound insensitive, because I think your point is well taken, is just that technology is good enough at the time it's needed, and then it will mature. So what you're asking for will come, but it will probably take a few more years.
Well, I think it's also that the designers don't have the same issues I do. I mean, if you had my vision, mm-hmm. you would design things my way.
Absolutely. No, totally fair. Totally fair point.
So if someone wanted to, how would they get a job like yours?
Well, these days, there are many, many undergraduate and graduate programs in design. And that is kind of the most common way to do it. You just go to school and you do that. But I would also argue that a lot of people that are good designers can come upon it and you just do a lot of it. Some of the best designers I've seen have actually been programmers who had that empathy I talked about earlier. And they just kind of honed that technique and just had an awful lot of practice. So again, I'm being a little bit against my tribe, because designers often tend to be, there are categories of designers that are more academic and, you know, want you to go through school and all of that. But I do find that the most brilliant people are the ones that have not gone through school and just have that empathy and just honed the skill through lots and lots of work.
If there is such a thing, what's a typical day like for you?
Well, again, there's a designer and then there's being a creative director at Frog. And so I would answer that question probably in terms of my current job, which is I have a small part of my day that's spent talking to new clients and, you know, meeting them, talking to them, see what they need, what's the issue, can we help them, that kind of thing. I'm usually working on two separate projects at once, and I will meet with those teams to see where they are. Frog is very unique in the sense that we have this very flat organization with lots of individual skill sets, and we'll get between 2 and 8 people together in a huddle to work on a project for, say, 4 to 16 weeks, and they break up and they go to the next one. And the role of a creative director is to kick off the project, work with the team, get started, and work with them to make sure that we're meeting the client's needs. And I kind of work between those two different teams. And then, of course, make sure that we show the work to the client.
Scott, everybody has to give themselves motivation occasionally. How do you give yourself a kick in the pants?
Wow, that's a very interesting question. Usually the way I motivate myself is to make a list. I find when I get demotivated, I just kind of lose track of what's important. And I'm a big believer in David Allen's Getting Things Done. And I find that the act of sitting down and writing everything out, both big and small, is just kind of a clarifying event. It reminds me of the things that I was put on earth to do, and as well as all the little stuff that's driving me crazy. And then it gives me a little bit of prioritization. And the prioritization usually helps quite a bit.
If you have to soothe yourself, how do you calm yourself down?
I cook.
Mm.
Yes, I am a big time cook. I really enjoy cooking a lot, whether it's bread or just making a nice meal for my family.
Do you have a particular cuisine?
I have a style, which is kind of make it up as you go. I really enjoy not following recipes. I enjoy kind of making stuff up as I go. But it tends to be pretty hearty, but healthy.
Is there an event in your life that has challenged you to the core?
Oh, absolutely. That would be when I was a junior year in college. I got my girlfriend pregnant, and we were clearly not ready to get married, and it was a very traumatic event, and it pretty much shook both of us up, but I'm happy to say that we stuck it out, and we're still married to this day, and we have 3 great kids.
Hmm.
But I do not recommend that people date that way. I got lucky.
Is there an idea or a principle that has helped you through your challenges?
Nothing really, frankly, comes to mind as a specific principle, other than when I have the, how can I say that? When I can remind myself, I always come back to the listen, listen, listen principle.
if you're giving a commencement address for high school or college, giving your best advice, what would you say?
I think that's always very hard because it feels like you're kind of telling them how to live their life. It would be much more of a just, you have a long career in front of you. You will probably have enough money. Make sure you kind of wander a bit and really explore, because the things that you do because you love are the things that you will get good at. And the things that you will good at are the things that you will eventually get a decent income from. So I think it's really important to find the thing that you really, really love.
I want to thank Scott Jensen for joining me today. Thanks, Scott. I appreciate it.
Happy to do it.
If you'd like to leave a comment, ask a question, or get more info, go to whatsitlike.info.